and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara-Papinski. I'm very excited to share an interview with an author and illustrator who has had such a big impact on young readers, Jarrett J. Krasoska. His latest book is a graphic memoir for young adults called Hey Kiddo, How I Lost My Mother, Found My Father, and Dealt with Family Addiction, and it is a National Book Award finalist. Hey Kiddo is a book that I could not put down. It is such a powerful story. It will break your heart, but leave you just with so much hope. It's so inspiring to see the way that art and creativity can transform people's lives. And now Jarrett continues to inspire others with his work today. You may know Jarrett from his other series, the Lunch Lady books or Jedi Academy. Those are some of the most popular books I ever checked out to students in my school library, so it was such a thrill to get to talk to Jarrett and hear more about his creative process. And Jarrett is also a local author. He grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, and still lives in Western Mass. And if you are also local to the Massachusetts area, stay tuned because there is a special event coming up on Saturday, November 10th with Jay Krasoska, and I will share the details later in the episode. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Jarrett J. Krasoska, welcome to A Bookish Home.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
Yeah, so your latest book is a young adult graphic memoir called Hey Kiddo, How I Lost My Mother, Found My Father, and Dealt with Family Addiction. Congratulations on the book and on your National Book Award nomination.
Thank you so much.
Many people know you as the author of the Lunch Lady series for kids and, of course, Jedi Academy and your picture books. And I have to tell you, I cannot count the number of kids who have come into my school library over the years and didn't really think they liked reading. And then they would try a Lunch Lady book and just be totally hooked and come back all the time asking for more. So a big thank you for that.
I'm so glad to know that. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's definitely an honor to get to speak with you. So I'm curious, what made you delve into a memoir as your next project? And then also why the shift to young adult, and if that had been something you had been wanting or an audience you'd been wanting to write for?
Sure. The graphic memoir is something I've been thinking about writing since even before I conceived the Lunch Lady books. I've been thinking about it in one way or another since about 2000, 2001. And it just percolated over the years. And it was something that took me, I had to build up the courage to write it and to write it authentically. I knew it would be for an audience that was about, you know, early teen and older, just based on not only the subject matter and how I wanted to handle the subject matter, but if I wanted to tell the story authentically and portray these people authentically, that involves, you know, all of the salty language that you don't see in a book for younger people.
So you write in the book that your mother, Leslie, was addicted to drugs and you didn't meet your father until you were 17 and you were taken in by your maternal grandparents, Joe and Shirley, when you were almost three. And we see that at the beginning of the book. And I found some of those scenes to be kind of the most heart-wrenching, and it got me thinking about how really seeing that with the illustrations kind of conveys some of the emotions and just that experience as a reader that I think you maybe wouldn't have with the text alone. We see you as a young child arriving to live at your grandparents just in tears, and then later going to visit your mother, and we see you kind of in the car reaching back toward her. And I just was curious how that worked in terms of your process. Like, as you're thinking about those scenes, did the illustrations come first? Does the writing come first? I'm just curious about how all of that happens for you in the process.
Sure. The process isn't terribly different from all of my other books. It's just the subject matter that is different. So typically with my other books, though, I do spend time sketching out the characters and getting to know who these characters are through sketching. You know, with Hey Kiddo, I knew who these characters were. So, but I would do some sketching over the years as I was thinking about writing the book and what would these people look like as illustrations in a book. But really it comes down to the writing first. So a graphic novel is written as a script, much like a movie would be. And so with my previous books, I would write the script with the page breaks in mind. And with Hey Kiddo, I just went in and just wrote it as a script without the page breakdowns in mind. And you know, with the script, you have the character's name and you have their dialogue. You have the other character's name. You have their dialogue. You have passages that are just describing what we're going to see in the art, much like a screenwriter would describe what the filmmaker would eventually shoot. And that is going to be easier to edit than if I spent the time sketching it all out. You know, so we can really hammer out all of the story problems and get the story in shape. And then from there, I reread the script now with thinking about the page turns in mind. So what is going to be the rhythm of each panels, the panels on each page, and how am I going to create something that ends at the bottom right-hand page to get that reader to turn the page? For instance, there's a scene where in preschool where I'm drawing a portrait of my family, and you see the character drawing, and you turn the page and you see a full spread of that drawing. So all of that rhythm and the sequencing is really important to any sort of graphics work.
And did you, I know since the characters are based on your own family and your friends growing up, did it take a while to figure out what you wanted, sort of, I guess, the style of the illustrations to be and the way you were depicting them in the illustrations? Or is that something that was sort of easy to come up with because you'd been maybe drawing family members and friends for a long time?
Well, in regards to like how I drew the people, you know, I had drawn these people before, and certainly as a young artist, you're constantly being asked to draw self-portraits in your art classes. So that wasn't a terribly odd experience. But what I did though know early on is that this needed to look very different from my other book. So I needed to develop a different visual vocabulary so that it would have artwork that was befitting of the subject matter, and it would have artwork that would contrast enough from my other work to signal to readers that this wasn't for younger readers. And so what I would do for a couple of years, I would just do a sketch every single day from life using a brush pen. And a brush pen is exactly what it sounds like. It's got ink all loaded up, and it's a brush, and you squeeze it and some ink comes out. And so I wanted to both draw more realistically, but also be very loose. So I didn't want to have tight line work like you would see in the Lunch Lady books, but I also wanted to look more realistic. So I would just draw what I would see around me every day. And, you know, for me, that's my kids and my dogs, or maybe the woods in the backyard, or if I'm traveling, people at airports. But specifically my time studying and drawing my kids. I mean, when you draw something from life, you really take the time to observe it and study it and look at it. And so I really get to know the ins and outs of, you know, my children's physical makeup. And then when I went back to look at some of the photos of me as a child, I realized that there's similarities because they're my kids, I'm their dad, but also just the way in which they would sleep or the way in which they would hold their head a certain way that I had been drawing for a few years.
Well, you know, I was thinking as I was reading too, and as you're bringing up drawing your kids, I know you had said that this is a project that has been in the back of your mind for a long time. And as I was reading, I was curious. I feel like I had a different reading experience than maybe I would have had before having kids. You know, there's a scene where you learn that, oh, it's not typical for a 3-year-old to have to go get their own breakfast in the morning. You're at your grandparents and you know, you're surprised that someone's there to give you breakfast in the morning. And that was so striking. And do you think it maybe helped your perspective writing the book and maybe brought the project further forward in your mind?
I mean, having children didn't spur me along to write the book, but having children did was it gave me more empathy for my mother and what she went through. So you know, when you're a kid, it's your world and everybody is living in it and everything's happening to you. But then you become older and you see the world in a more broader spectrum. But also for me, when I became a parent, I couldn't imagine being separated from my kids. So having children allowed me and empowered me to write about my own mother's shortcomings with more empathy.
Mm-hmm. And kind of toward the beginning, we sort of first see some of your experience with art in writing back and forth with your mother. And you're passing back cartoons back and forth and drawings. Is that kind of how you first got interested in art?
I think she was doing that because she knew I love to draw. And I'm sure she drew with me some probably before then. But what that did, when my mother would send me letters with her drawings enclosed, and she was incarcerated at the time. Yes, I mean, that really made me realize that she was given this great gift and she was very talented, but she just was never able to do anything with that talent, never able to do anything with those skills. Mm-hmm. And so that's what spurred me along to really work hard on making a career out of this and being able to do good with the same gifts I had been given.
Well, it's so inspiring. I mean, I think that's one of the things I loved the most about the book, just that whole idea of art kind of being your lifeline, and I guess also having the perspective of, in a way, sort of knowing how some of the story turns out and having seen in young readers that I know that then you became sort of a lifeline for them in a lot of ways with the Lunch Lady books, with your other stories, and providing them that inspiration. So I thought that was so interesting. The part you mentioned this in your TED talk too, where you meet Jack Gantos and he comes to your school. Could you share that story? Because that was just so inspiring, and I'm sure now comes full circle in your work with kids today.
Yeah. So when I was in third grade, I remember an author coming to visit our school, and I remember sitting in the assembly, and I remember hearing the author talk about their book Rotten Ralph, and then we all went back to our third grade classrooms, Mrs. Turner's. For me, that was Mrs. Turner's classroom. And then we were all drew our versions of Rotten Ralph. And I remember the author appearing in our doorway and going up and down the aisles of the desk, looking at everyone's work. And he stopped next to my desk and tapped on my desk and just simply said, "Nice cat," and walked on. And I remember that. And it's just, I think, it's a testament to how powerful our words are as adults when we're interacting with kids. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you just never know what they're going to hold on to or what's going to stick out in their consciousness.
Yeah. And you seem to have so many of those sort of small interactions that had a big impact and with educators too. And I definitely, I'm sure they are, but I hope lots of teachers and librarians are reading this as well. Because as you say, it just really shows the power of, you know, the way we interact with kids and how our words can really make a difference. And the other thing I thought was so interesting to see and powerful was the way your grandparents supported your art and how they gave you the opportunity to go to the Worcester Art Museum for classes. Is that, I mean, I know you were drawing on your own before that, but do you think that really was kind of what helped put you on the path to becoming an illustrator?
I do, you know, because, you know, aside from the instruction I got there, which was really important and crucial for my development. But I think even more important for a young artist for me was to be around other young artists, to be around peers that shared similar interests. And we would push each other. We would make each other's work better just by simply being near each other. And that's something that I didn't have in my day-to-day work at school. There weren't a lot of artists, and the arts programs did get cut in the Worcester Public Schools at the time. And so, those classes were just a lifeline. It was something for me to really look forward to and a very safe space that I could create and confer with other like-minded kids.
So you went on to RISD, and from there ended up publishing your first picture book called Goodnight Monkey Boy. And I thought it was so cool. I noticed recently you had shared, I didn't realize that another kidlit author and illustrator, Grace Lynn, that you had known her then, and she even helped give you a tip to help get published.
Yeah, Grace and I are old friends. So when I graduated from RISD in 99, and I joined a Yahoo group of some illustration grads from RISD, and there was maybe about six or seven of us on that Yahoo group at the time. And Grace was living just down the street from where I ended up. I was in Somerville, Massachusetts. And so there was this little group of us that would get together in Boston. Anna Alter was another one of those individuals. And she's publishes these great picture books and chapter books for which she's author and illustrator for. And so Grace had had her first picture book had just been published. It was called The Ugly Vegetables. And I would go to the Someday Cafe, which was this little cafe down in Davis Square. I lived in Union Square, and I would walk down to Davis Square to just sit and draw. And every now and then some of us would meet there. And I was sending out my postcards to art directors, because everyone in art school would tell you to send your promotional postcards to art directors. And Grace suggested that maybe I should try my hand at sending some of the postcards to editors, because they're typically the ones who would then, you know, hire the illustrator, and then that illustrator would then get passed on to the art director once the book was contracted. And so I sent out a batch of postcards to editors, and one of those editors wrote back, and that led to actually my first picture book that I was both author and illustrator for. So I was pitching myself as an illustrator only, but the editor saw that maybe there was promise in me writing as well. So she asked if I had any stories that I had tried writing. And of course I had. And so I went into New York in December of 99, and I had these four picture books that I had written, and Goodnight Monkey Boy was one of them. And then that was later published on June 12th of 2001.
You know, I've noticed you're both on tour for books right now, or promoting books right now, and you actually even have events coming up on the same day in the Boston area on Saturday the 10th. You're going to be at the Boston Athenaeum, and she's going to be at the Eric Carle Museum, and I'll link to those in the show notes. But has that been really special to sort of come up together? And now, I mean, you're both at just such amazing heights in your kidlit careers.
It's so cool. I mean, Grace Lynn is like, you know, she's like my literary sister. Like, we are like siblings in that way. Like, we've grown up together there. We both lived in Somerville, and now we live down the street from each one another in Western Massachusetts. And we collaborate on special projects, you know, within the children's book community, and we celebrate each other's successes. You know, when she was longlisted for a National Book Award, there's a little authors group we have, and I brought these gourmet donuts from this place in town, and then she returned the favor this year, and she brought cupcakes as we celebrated when Hey Kiddo made it onto the long list. So it is really cool. I'm very grateful that we remain in one another's lives. It's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. And, you know, it was interesting as I was reading, I kept thinking of her too for a different reason. She, I'm sure you were watching and cheering. She did that TED Talk on windows and mirrors.
Yeah, she did a great job
children's
with that.
Book. Yeah, which had such an impact on me. And I had even shown it to classes before. And I kept thinking as I was reading your book, what a powerful window and mirror it's going to be for kids. And I'm curious if you've had lots of kids coming up to you eager to tell you that, like what an impact it's had on them, and especially kids who maybe it was such a mirror for.
Well, I mean, those are the kids who shared the stories that spurred me on to write the book. So, you know, I was post TED Talk, and I would visit these schools. And my TED Talk came out in 2012 or 2013. I think it was delivered in 12, and then went to the main page of TED.com in early 2013. So at any rate, at any school I went to, it would be noted by an adult that there were kids at the school that were dealing with an incarcerated parent or a parent who had a drug addiction. Sometimes those children would identify themselves. Sometimes they wouldn't. So that's what made me really get going to write this book, where I went from thinking, well, maybe this is a book I want to write, to now this is a book that I need to write. I have heard from, I got a couple of emails through a chain of events from young people who've read this book. I've seen a couple of things online from grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. But, you know, ultimately, the book is still very new. It's only been out for a couple of weeks now, and I'm still just touring for it. So I'm hoping to, you know, meet some more of these young people face to face who may be able to identify and share similar experience.
Oh, I'm sure there's going to be so many. And one of the things that I you know, was thinking about too, as I was reading, you talk so much in the book about how, art does become a lifeline, and it's, you know, I think it's so important for kids to sort of have their thing. And art was obviously yours, and of course, you know, writing and story as well. And it got me thinking about how you've approached sort of passing on that gift of art and story to your own kids.
Well, you know, I tell when I'm speaking to kids, especially on this tour too, you know, I talk about how there are so many different ways to be intelligent. You know, I have an arts intelligence. One might have a musical intelligence. One might have, you know, very strong interpersonal skills. And regardless of what that is, there's a way to dive into that and have that be how you spend your life as an adult. You know, because I think that some kids might just say, oh, well, this guy could draw when he was a kid. I do not have any artistic talents. I but there are so many different forms of intelligence. There's so many different forms of talents. So, you know, with my own kids, that's how we approach it. You know, if we spend a lot of time being creative, mostly as an alternative to too much screen time, which is easy to dive into when you've got small kids. I mean, we have three kids. So, you know, and however they decide to use these various skills they have someday, that's going to be wonderful to see what they choose to do.
And what is your, I'm always curious to know sort of what people's daily creative routine is. What is your process like, or in terms of like a writing and illustrating routine?
Yeah, I mean, it's assuming I have the time carved out to actually do that, and I'm not traveling or visiting schools or bookstores and that sort of stuff. But I used to be able to pull all nighters, but I just can't now, and I don't know if it's a mix of age and having those three kids, but it seems that when the kids are down at 8 o'clock, I'm just toast. You know, I can barely just get an episode of a show in with my wife.
I hear that.
So I, you know, and our youngest is two. So he's just now, you know, he's settled into a routine. He's not waking up in the middle of the night. Ideally, you know, if I can muster the energy to wake up at 5 in the morning, and get a couple of hours of work of anything done before they wake up, that's wonderful. Sometimes I just don't have the energy to. Sometimes I do have the energy to, and then for whatever reason, my boy is up at 6. So then I'm not getting that time in the morning. But if he's in daycare and the kids are in school, so, you know, whenever I can get home after drop off to then whenever one has to leave to pick them up, that's really my window of opportunity to get as much done as possible.
I'm curious, do you think that you will continue on with any YA graphic novels, or are you planning to do more middle grade? What's next?
Next is a little bit of everything. I mean, I've been wanting to write young adult for several years now, and it's just going to be another track. You know, I tell stories with words and pictures, and for me, that started with picture books, and then I added a track of graphic novels and chapter books for middle grade readers, and now young adults. So, what's next is more stories with words and pictures, and the story itself will dictate what age range it's sort of pitched to.
And you also, I think it was maybe in the acknowledgments, you had talked about working with your editor, David Levithan, who I so admire, and I was curious if this was the only book you had worked on together, or has he been involved with Lunch Lady?
No, he wasn't involved with Lunch Lady. His novels are published with Knopf Books for Young Readers at Random House, which is where Lunch Lady and my early picture books are published. And so we would be on tour together. And so we would have you know, mail with his editor or people that we knew mutually from the publisher. And that's how we became friends. And because of that friendship, he was really able to dig in deep on this book and edit this book in a way that just got these stories out of me.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions too, because I'm sure that's a very different experience, sort of diving into a revision process, an editorial process, when all of the content is so personal. Was that, you know, even just overwhelming from the sense of all of these things really happened? So how do you choose where to cut and what to include? Was that just a much more overwhelming editorial process than normal?
At first, yeah. I mean, you know, you realize pretty quickly that there's a difference between organizing a list of memories and telling a story. You know, you're using these memories to tell a story. So you have to figure out what your through line is. You know, one of the things David had pointed out is like, you know, I really think this is a family. This is a story about family. So if you're writing a scene and that story has nothing to do with family, and, you know, we include my best friend Pat in that umbrella of family, then it just doesn't belong in the story. And that's a piece mm-hmm. that you either give that to a piece of fiction later. Maybe there's something deeper that can be explored in this memory or that memory to create another book down the line. But it really took somebody who knew me as well as David does to pull some of these stories out of me and to create a safe space to have these conversations, because there is that awkward point in the editorial process where David was up front. So, okay, this is the weird part where I now start talking about you in the third person and talking about these people as if they're characters in a book, because that's now what they're becoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's sort of the quintessential editor in my mind. I worked at Scholastic for a couple of years after college, and he would have no idea who I am. Yeah. But I would sort of watch the way my cubicle was positioned. I'd like watch him walk by and then go back to his office and just, you know, he'd speak sometimes and sort of share some of his insights and about the process and things. So I thought that was so cool that he was the editor on this. Yeah. Well, one of the things I always like to hear is what authors and illustrators are reading themselves, whether it's, you know, a picture book to your kids or adult books or more middle grade. Is there anything you've read lately that you would want to recommend to listeners?
Yeah. So I still have young kids. So I'm reading picture books a lot. We're reading chapter books a lot. The last four books that we're super into that I also have a show on SiriusXM where I recommend books for those listeners. So that's how I'm able to really like quickly call upon what my most recent picks are.
Yeah.
Dreamers by Juji Morales and Carmela Full of Wishes mm-hmm. by Matt De La Pena and Christian Robinson, and The Day You Begin by Jacqueline Woodson and Rafael Lopez, and Mac B Kid Spy by Mac Barnett and Mike Lowry. Those have all been such powerful books, and this Mac B Kid Spy is really funny and also, you know, plays with the concept of, you know, memoir and, you know, could you really believe everything that you read?
Well, that's great. The Day You Begin, I just adore. It's just, it's so good. I really love that one a lot. And Carmela Full of Wishes, I have not gotten a hold of yet, but I love both of them. So, those are great. I'll definitely link to all those in the show notes.
Yeah, please do.
Well, Jared Krasoska, thank you so much for speaking with me. And I do want to mention just again for local listeners, that you'll be at the Boston Athenaeum, on Saturday, November 10th. So people should definitely go listen to you. And actually you're going to be appearing with Jack Gantos. Is that right?
Yes. Jack Gantos is going to be moderating a conversation with me after my reading, which is this wonderfully and beautifully full circle.
Definitely be looking, forward to the National Book Award announcement, as I'm sure you are, and crossing my fingers.
we're excited to be at the party, man. Like, we get to get dressed up and go to this fancy party, and no matter what, I get a sticker on the book. You know, as a finalist, you get a silver sticker for the rest of your life. So that's fantastic.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations, and thank you again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
I'm just looking forward to reading more of your books as they come out. I'm a big fan, so this was very, very exciting.
Oh, it's been great, too. Thank you, Laura.
I hope you pick up a copy of Hey Kiddo at your local library or bookstore. And if you're hoping to find out more about Jarrett J. Krasoska, you can visit his website. It's studiojjk.com. And also follow him on social media at studiojjk. For links to the upcoming event at the Boston Athenaeum and to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit the show notes at abookishhome.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at abookishhome. And my site is abookishhome.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. And please rate and review in iTunes if you would like to help out the show. Thanks for listening and happy reading.